She has been Chief Justice of the Wisconsin Supreme Court for all of about 3 weeks, so it's a great time for a newsmaker's interview with Chief Justice Pat Rogenczak. Your Honor, thanks for coming back to Wisconsin Eye.
Oh, well, you're very welcome. I'm pleased to be here.
April was pretty interesting. The voters approved a change where seniority would no longer dictate who would be Chief Justice. And once that was certified, there was a motion, and you got 4 votes, and you're Chief Justice for now all about 3 weeks. Can I ask this? Why did you want to be Chief Justice, Your Honor?
Well, I think that the position is important as you move forward and as we try to better serve the people of Wisconsin. And I had a lot of ideas about how the court might be able to do that. A lot of ideas about how to have a more consensus type of administration for the court rather than everything being decided by the person who held the position of Chief Justice. I thought that would be good for the people of Wisconsin and better for the collegiality on the court. So I was enthusiastic about giving that a try. And when I was asked if I would do it, I said yes.
How is your management style different from the Chief Justice,
Shirley Abramson? You know, I try to be very inclusive. People have different interests on the court. You know, the court is very large. People look at our decisions that we make and they think that's the whole ball of wax for the Supreme Court. That's just a tiny, tiny part of it. You know, we have 3 major tasks, deciding the cases and controversies that come before us, and that's mostly what you read about in the newspaper, establishing the budget and overseeing the budget for the entire court system, all the way down, you know, every court, every agency of the court, all of that we're responsible for. And then, of course, we are responsible for disciplining lawyers and judges who get their toe caught in the door. So we have a lot of functions that people don't think about. And the way in which we handle the administrative functions, administering all of the different levels of the court, budget, but other kinds of administration, helping them with programs, encouraging innovation, there are just a lot of things going on all the time. So with people having different interests, I am working toward having individual justices be responsible for a part of the administration. And then that justice will report back to the Supreme Court as a whole. So we're always kept up to date. So there's a quicker turnaround with a request, something that needs to go forward. For example, Justice David Prosser is going to be the justice who is the point justice for the library. Now, I bet a lot of people don't know that the state law library is part of the Supreme Court, but it is. And we have an office, of course, in Madison, our big state law library. We also have a branch in Dane County and a branch in Milwaukee County. All of that is so important to the service of the people of Wisconsin, but I'll bet people don't really realize that it is the Supreme Court who operates that library. Well, Justice Prosser is going to be in charge of that. Justice Annette Ziegler is going to be in charge of all of the educational aspects of the court. And we do a lot of different things educationally. We have separate committees on it. We have a separate educational office for judicial education. We have a judicial college. We have a lot of parts that the public may not know about, but they work together to better serve the public and to have a court system that is educated on new procedures, educated on law changes as they come about, either through statutes or through rule changes. So they're very important. And having one person that is primarily responsible for an area like that will give a quicker turnaround. It'll give more innovation because it's not just the ideas that Pat Rogenczak thinks about. It's the ideas that Justice Ziegler may put forward and then bring back to the court for the court to look at and say, yep, this is the way we want to go, or let's change this a little bit. And so I just think it will be very helpful. It's not happened in the past.
That was my next question. Yeah. These delegations and who takes the lead have not happened in the past?
No, that's not the way it was operated. Now, you know, the Chief Justice can be absolutely the only authority on everything. That's one way of fulfilling that position. It's not the only way, and I choose to do it differently.
Okay. After you became Chief Justice, you met with court officers, you met with leaders of the Court of Appeals judges, Circuit Court judges, the Bar Association.
Yep.
Did you find any major concerns that you were not aware of prior to your elevation as Chief Justice?
Well, you know, with every person I met with, and I met with them one by one, and I went to their offices so that we could have a more casual. I didn't want to like call them in to my office. That seems quite formal. I went to their offices and I had two tasks for each of them. Number one is, if there is anything that's soon to be happening that I need to take care of as Chief Justice, mm-hmm. please let me know so nothing falls through the cracks. And I asked each and every one of them that same question, and I did get one response from one of our managers about she needed me to give a delegation that had been given in the past so reserve judges could be signed. So I did that the very same day. Then I asked each and every one of them to put their thinking caps on to address two concerns. Number one, how can you use your management to better serve the people of Wisconsin? What are you doing with your team that might be changed a little bit, and doing so might better serve the people of Wisconsin? The other task I gave them is, our court has kind of gotten a bumped up reputation. I think it's undeserved. I think the Wisconsin Supreme Court is a marvelous court. You know, we are cited throughout the United States this year, last year, the year before, as far back as you want to look, for the excellence of our opinions, for our reasoning. So, you know, that's one thing that I want to bring out, and I'm glad you give me this opportunity to talk about it. But I asked them, are there other things the court is doing that the public should know about? And if we're not, do you have any bright ideas about how to better improve the reputation of the Wisconsin Supreme Court? So we are all working as a team. This is a team effort. And everyone has been uniformly helpful, given me knowledge I didn't have, said they put their thinking cap on. We're working on some new innovations that may lead to e-filing. That's electronic filing, which the federal courts use. And we use it on a voluntary basis now. We're considering how we might change it or if we might change it. So we are working on a ton of new ventures that will cause the court to better serve the public. And it's my view that as I go forward, my eyes are on the public. You know, Steve, those are my bosses. They're the ones who elected me to be a justice on the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
And the Court of Appeals before that.
And the Court of Appeals before that. And I take their charge seriously. So I try to look at, what are we doing? How can we better serve the public? And how can we tell the public, you know, we're working for you. We're doing a good job. Other courts throughout the United States routinely cite the Wisconsin Supreme Court. So that needs to be news that you can read about in the paper instead of putting us out as the bad news bears all the time.
What are your thoughts on how to address the personal dynamics and the personal disagreements in the past?
Well, you know, it's going to be bumpy for a while because right. We're not all on the same page, as I'm sure that you know from what's been reported previously. But I believe that each and every justice has a special skill that if they apply it in an area of the Supreme Court's administration, they can make our court function better. So I'm looking for those things. I've told you two of the things I've already identified.
Yeah.
And I will be talking to everybody. You know, is there a special area that you have a high interest in that you'd like to be the point person for, to develop innovations, to be sure things are running smoothly, to report back to the full court so that we all know what you're doing, and that we approve of what you're doing, but we have more innovation. We have more thoughtful and more prompt turnaround on problems that may arise in different parts of our administration.
Justice Abramson was Chief Justice for 19 years, as you know.
Yep.
And there is a pending lawsuit, which I understand you can't discuss because you're a party to it. You've
right.
been sued. But have you been able to sit down with Justice Abramson one-on-one, or is that not possible given the pending lawsuit?
You know, at this point in time, I think it would be not a fruitful conversation,
okay.
but we will have the conversation later on. I know this is hard for her, Steve, and I'm trying really, as best I can, not to make it any more difficult than it has to be. But when the lawsuit is over and things calm down,
okay.
we'll have time to talk with one another. You know, we were friends before I ever came on the court. I knew her. I met her when I was in law school. So I've known her for a very long time.
Have you been able to have any conversation with Justice Bradley or Crooks since the lawsuit?
Yes. Well, Justice Crooks, yes. Justice Bradley, no. She is basically on the same page as Justice Abrahamson is, but that will
okay.
settle down too.
You can't discuss the merits of the lawsuit, but I do want to ask you about two filings that came from Justice Walsh Bradley and crux, just about two terms, that there's one term, chaos, number two, that there's upheaval in the court given the transition. It doesn't deal directly with the lawsuit. Is there chaos and upheaval,
no,
ma'am?
There is not. I mean, every person I spoke with, and I think in my statement to the court, I then had spoken with 17 people. I've done more since that, and I have more appointments tomorrow individually with members of the court who help us better serve the public. So, no, there's not chaos, and people are not concerned. I'm very open to suggestions, and when something comes up that I have to do, and I'm not quite sure how is the best way to handle it, I just call in some of my managers, and I say, this is in your area. Help me do it so I do it correctly, and so the public is best served, and I'm not stepping on somebody's toes because I don't know the procedure that's been used in the past. 100% of the time, they have been helpful to me. So there's no chaos. We're doing just fine.
I don't know some of the things I read and some of the things I'm here. I'm glad you're here so we can straighten them out. Have you asked Justice Abramson to give up the chambers that she's occupied?
Never.
Okay,
never.
Let's clear that up.
Yeah,
okay.
Well, you know, Justice Bradley put that in her statement, and that's just a made-up fact. It's simply not accurate.
Okay.
I am in the office I've been in since I started in 2003 mm-hmm. on the Supreme Court, and the ability to function effectively and fully as the Chief Justice does not require a different physical space. I'm happy to stay where I am, and I am. And I have not asked that she be removed from her office because I'm now the Chief Justice or for any other reason.
And then it's a small issue, but it's very symbolic. The seating chart, it's been seniority. Now, you'll be the Chief. Yeah. Will it continue to be seniority after that? Have you thought about that?
I'm not sure what you're talking about. You're talking about as we sit on the bench?
Yes, ma'am.
As we sit on the bench, it's always been the Chief Justice in the middle.
At the center,
okay.
Yes. Flanked
right.
By.
That's right. But it has, and then one side to the other, you go by seniority
yes.
After you position the Chief Justice. And we will keep it that way. That's the drill that I sent out to everybody. But as you note, sometimes the Chief Justice is not the most senior person on a court. For example, the United States Supreme Court. John Roberts is far from the most senior person. He sits in the middle.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So we will have that same seating pattern, but the person in the middle will be the Chief Justice, whether that person is longest serving, youngest, in the middle, somewhere in the middle. But you have to be in the middle to preside. That's really our
foundation. This week, the Journal Sentinel and other news organizations reported that only the four of you were at the graduation ceremony for Marquette Law School students.
Yes, that's right.
What's your understanding of why the other three were not there? Were they boycotting? Were they pouting?
You know, I think you'd have to ask them. After the judge issued his last ruling saying that he would not prevent me from acting as the Chief Justice as I have in the past, I got an email from first one, then another, and then finally three justices saying they were not going to attend the swearing in of the Marquette graduates. And I tried to persuade them not to do it. I sent them back an email saying, please rethink it. This is so important to these new admittees. It's important to their family, their friends. And, you know, their chairs were left for them in the morning, but they didn't show up. So why they didn't show up, I think you probably have to ask them.
Okay. Do you have any other oral arguments scheduled in this term?
No, we are done with oral arguments in this term.
Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So you try to convince them to come, because this is normally a
joyous
thing
calendar
for both
for
the
year.
UW and the,
that's
and,
right.
and the Marquette?
Yeah. It's been on our calendar for a year. We will have UW admissions on the 2nd of June.
Okay.
So we'll be back on the bench again for that. We also have open administrative conference, which will be the 10th of June. I don't think there is a hearing that day, but there is an open administrative conference where we sit in a certain routine around the table. And Wisconsin I always covers those.
Yes, we cover all your orals and these conferences.
Yes.
You would expect those three to participate in those?
I have no reason to believe they aren't going to participate. They are justices of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. So.
The administrative conferences have always been in the open, and as I say, Wisconsin I carries them. Do you think they should remain in the open, Your Honor?
Well, we have an administrative conference that discusses rules petitions. That's the only thing that the court has continue to have as open administrative conference. So it has to be a rules petition or relating to a rules petition. I think right now we're chatting about e-filing, which I mentioned before. So that will probably be something we'll be talking about on the 10th.
Okay. So you would, do you see any reason to change those and to take those behind closed doors?
No. I think that they're working, you know, efficiently where they are. So
some of those petitions have been pending, I think, since 2007, 2008.
That's right.
Is it your goal to get those long-standing ones resolved, ma'am?
It is, to move them forward. That's right.
What do you see as the biggest ones that have been around the longest that you'd like to bring closure to?
I did not review that before I came in, so I really can't tell you.
Okay.
What are the ones that have been hanging out there for the longest period of time? But we are looking at them. We're going to try to get them cleaned up as much as we can.
Is there a funding, I don't want to use the term crisis, but at the end of this fiscal year, does the Supreme Court have to return to the Department of Administration a certain amount of money?
We have a lapse.
Okay.
Okay. And
that's the best term, lapse.
That's right. That's what they call it. And it's not a cut in our budget. Which means our budget starts out at the same place, although we're going to have a different kind of budget, I think, next biennium. But it was an $11.8 million lapse. We, at this point, anticipate that we will meet that lapse. We've tried very hard to work with the administration on that.
Are you going to have to cut? Do you anticipate cutting some current programs to make that 11.8 million lapse?
No, I think that we have, you know, we've left some positions unfilled for a while, sometimes inadvertently so, like the Director of State Courts position has been unfilled since July.
Right.
And that was not planned to be that way. We also had a death in the person who was the Director of Judicial Education, so that's been unfilled. We are actively looking to take care of those two problems.
Do you think, given the pending lawsuit, means you may not get the best candidates to be Director of State Courts until the lawsuit is resolved, Your Honor?
Well, you know, I'll give you a little scoop because it's not out yet. The court has decided to hire an interim Director of State Courts for a period of 6 months so that everything will be running smoothly as we review new candidates. All of our staff, they have just been wonderful. Everybody has taken a little bit of that job and filled in. But really, we need someone there because that is kind of the hub around which the administration that's not judicial turns. So we are going to move forward on that.
Office of Lawyer Regulation has been in the news a lot because of the backlog and the time it takes to resolve these issues.
Right.
Will you or another member of the court be the liaison on that issue?
Yeah, I will be, and we're having a meeting, I believe it's June 2nd, with the OLR. And we have a number of things on our agenda about moving the backlog forward. One of the things that I was concerned about, and I've talked with Keith Celine about that, is triaging the complaints that come in. And by that, I mean those complaints that are about the most serious allegations should get put to the top of the pile rather than just having our agency go through them in the order in which they were filed with OLR. And he's agreeable to doing that. So I think that will help. It will help the public to understand that if there's a backlog and things are waiting, they are minor concerns rather than someone who's stealing money out of a trust account, which is obviously a major concern.
Do you have a goal in mind to resolve OLR complaints within X amount of time, Your Honor?
No, I don't.
Okay.
After 3 weeks, I don't have all my goals in order yet. it may take me a little bit longer.
I understand. There's been a debate, and when she has appeared before the Joint Finance Committee, former Chief Justice Abramson has talked about pay of judges. Are our judges paid too low, Your Honor?
In my view, our judges are paid too low. We are much below judges in the surrounding Midwest states. So that's something that we really do have to consider. But it's something that I have to work with the legislature on, and we will be looking at that.
Do you see that as an issue for the current budget, or is that something you're going to push for down after the current budget is adopted?
I think we will conclude the current budget because there was not a request for a pay increase in the current biennial budget that Chief Justice Abrahamson submitted.
Okay,
at that point in time, now that you have Chief Justice Rogensack, we still have to deal with the budget that my predecessor submitted. But we are going to work on that. And how that will take place, I'm not sure. But I have good relationship with a number of people in the legislature. I worked with them a lot before the Joint Finance took up the court's budget. And I anticipate continuing good relationships with members of the legislature.
Before you became a Supreme Court Justice in 2003, you served on the Court of Appeals for 7 years.
Yes.
So you've been watching circuit court judges. Are we losing qualified and experienced circuit court judges because of the pay issue, Your Honor?
I think to some degree that can be a problem. And oftentimes there are two wage earners in a family. Sometimes there's one. And for some of our judges who have three or four children that mm-hmm. are of college age and they are the sole wage earner, our salaries have got to be difficult. If the children don't get scholarships, it's got to be difficult to cover all the bases with that. Now, have they told me that? No, they have not. But I do think it's something that we need to consider as a court as we look at this.
The issue of civil Gideon, where someone who was not accused of a crime but involved maybe a domestic lawsuit and other type of civil actions.
Yeah.
Your feelings on civil Gideon?
Well, you know, I think it's a good idea, but we have no money for it.
Okay.
I mean, it would cost a giant amount of money to do
yes.
it. But we have something called the Access to Justice Commission, which arranges for legal representation for people who have civil types of disputes, like if you're having a problem with your children and you're in court,
mm-hmm.
if you're getting evicted from your apartment and you're in court, those kinds of things are civil problems, but they're very important problems that having a lawyer by your side, I think, would make a big difference. Well, as you know, I have said that whatever extra compensation I get as a supplement to my salary as a justice, because of the position of Chief Justice, that $8,000 I'm not taking, I'm giving to the Access to Justice Commission. That's a drop in a huge bucket, and we need to look at it. We have looked at it to the extent that $50 of every lawyer's bar dues goes to Access to Justice Commission to, again, arrange for assistance for those folks that can't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
I think having a lawyer by your shoulder when you go to court is really important. And I've encouraged the bar, and they have really stepped up to the plate, to do a lot more pro bono. That's when a lawyer represents someone in court, but they get no pay for it. And they know they're not going to get any pay before they start out. So we're working on that in a number of different ways. But the need is great, and the ability to fill it right now is far from complete.
You can't talk about the pending lawsuit, and I understand that. But can I ask you this? Were you surprised that it was filed, Your Honor?
Well, I guess I was to the extent I never thought about it. I mean, it didn't occur to me that Justice Abrahamson would file a lawsuit to go against the will of the voters. But she filed it, of course, the day after the voters voted, you know. 53% of the voters decided that this is what we should do. And you know, this is what states are doing throughout the United States. We are now the 23rd state that permits its own justices to elect its own chief for a period of time, and then it's reviewed again on a regular basis. So I guess you could say I was surprised. I never really thought about it. And then it happened, so.
The issue of recusals. Justices don't have to give a reason when they get off a case.
Right.
Are you perfectly satisfied with that, or should there be a higher standard, someone saying, giving some reason for why she or he is off a case?
Yeah, do you know, I give reasons. If you go back and read mine, I do give reasons when I get off a case, because I want to tell the public what I'm thinking, and I think it's important that they know. I think you have an obligation to sit, Steve, to start with, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And people want to focus on the obligation to recuse. I was elected to sit. So if I'm not going to do what I was elected to do, I feel I have to tell the voters why I'm not fulfilling my obligation in that regard. So I write on it. I can't really answer your question fully because I haven't thought about it. Whether every justice should have to do that, I don't know the answer to that. I always think it's good to tell the people that elected you why you're doing something different than what they elected you to do. That's just my personal view on it.
But you're not at the point where you would possibly suggest a rule.
No, I'm not.
Okay. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about, you've run for office several times, and you've seen the growing price tags and the millions of dollars being spent by campaigns and by third-party groups to elect or to defeat, it doesn't matter. Bad trend for our courts, Your Honor?
Well, you know, we have elected judges and elected justices. You have to have money to run a campaign. I think where most of the complaints come in is for third-party expenditures. Now, this last time I was elected, I think we raised about $700,000, right around there. It's all public information, so if you want the exact number, you should call GAB. That was my campaign.
Yes.
Right. I do know that the Chief Justice who ran, Shirley Abrahamson, when she ran her 2009 campaign, raised $1.6 million, and she spent all that.
Yep.
We spent all our $700,000. So someplace in there is the amount of money it takes to run a statewide campaign today. Okay, I don't hear a lot of flack about the amount of money the justice raises as he or she runs a campaign. What I hear is a third-party expenditure. And we don't have any control over that. Absolutely no control. So those decisions about what they can spend or not are made by the United States Supreme Court.
Right.
And their shoes are way bigger than my shoes. So, you know, whatever they say is the law we all have to follow. So I think that's what's going on. I do think, however, that the press could be helpful in this regard. Let me tell you how. Whenever I read an article, there's always an inference that because an independent expenditure was made that benefited a particular judge or justice, that somehow that bought a vote.
Influence, yes, ma'am.
Oh, yeah. And I think that denigrates the court as an institution, and it is a huge disservice to the court and the people of the state. People, I believe, whether it's somebody that gives you $50 or it's an independent expenditure, I believe they do so because they think you operate correctly for your office. Now, I've said it many times. I am not a judge that thinks that I should decide the policies for the state. I think the legislature does that. That's what they got elected to do. I didn't get elected to do that. And I think it's my job when I review a statute of the legislature that unless it's proven unconstitutional beyond a reasonable doubt, I have to let it go. Now, do I always agree with their policies? No. But that's not my job to agree or disagree. My job is to perform a constitutional function if they've stepped over the line. But otherwise, that's their job. And I do think that people who have supported me support a justice who operates with judicial restraint, that you don't just hop in and take over the legislature's job, or you don't just hop in and take over the governor's job. We have a three-part system of government. They all have important jobs, but they're really quite different. So I think that's why people give contributions and why independent expenditures are made, because they believe your judicial philosophy matches theirs. It doesn't line up with any case or other case. So,
but you've heard some that say with special interest groups spending $1 million to influence election for a Supreme Court justice, that's an argument for no longer electing justices but appointing them. Your feeling?
Well, you know, I have to give a disclaimer on this. First of all, I was never involved in politics until I ran for the Court of Appeals. So if I couldn't run, I would never have gotten appointed. I didn't know anybody that was close to then-Governor Thompson. You know, I don't know anybody that's really close to Governor Walker. So I think if you let judges run for election, the public gets a broader spectrum of people because you have people that maybe well-connected politically, and people that have no connections, okay? So I believe in an elective system, but I have to say, you know, I'm a little bit biased because I wouldn't have had this opportunity for the job I have, and I love my job. Now, I also think that if you're going to trust a group of people in a closed room to pick someone, or you're going to trust the voters, I trust the voters. So I think elective system is good. And you know, this was thoroughly discussed when Wisconsin's constitution was put together because we had the model of the federal system, which is an appointed judge. Well, the Wisconsin voters and those who ratified the actually the Constitution decided we should have elected judicial officials. So all of the officers in the state of Wisconsin, whether you're legislative, you're the governor, you're a judicial officer, we are all accountable to the people. I don't think that's such a bad deal.
Should voters, though, know that XYZ third-party group spent $3 million or $4 million on behalf to defeat or elect a candidate?
I don't have a problem with that. That they know, you know, that's not for me to say. Again, that you're going to deal with the U.S. Supreme Court and how much disclosure is required. So I don't, you know, but I think that we have to follow the what the U.S. Supreme Court has done, and how that plays out, I don't know. But I do think that the press can be helpful in pointing out the philosophy of the judge really drives who supports that judge, not a decision that is currently pending. And, you know, that's been the law in Wisconsin for a long time. When Justice Butler was on the court, we had a case, Storms versus Action Wisconsin. And during that time, the lawyer for Action Wisconsin and a couple of members of the board of directors gave Justice Butler lawful contributions mm-hmm. for his campaign. And as it turned out in that case, we were a 4-3 split, and Justice Butler was part of the four. So they brought this action saying that he was biased. He should get off because he'd had this contribution. And our court said, no, he should not get off. It's a lawful contribution, and that is the Wisconsin system. There was nothing else alleged there. So the holding was, if the contribution is lawful with nothing else, mm-hmm. in other words, no quid pro quo for the contribution, then there's no reason for a justice or a judge to get off a case. So I think that's the rule we've had for a long time.
Okay. Being discussed in the Assembly and Senate is a proposal, mandatory retirement age for Supreme Court justices. Your position?
Well,
I hear age 65, I hear age 70 discussed.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't seen any legislation that's come through in that regard. I did hear a little bit of a rumblings about that before last term, I think. But I didn't know that anything was introduced. So if it's been introduced, I haven't seen it.
What's your feeling on a age to force retirement?
Well, you know, the legislature under our Constitution has that authority. So I guess I have to live with whatever they decide to do.
Okay. Final question, since we're almost out of time.
Yeah.
Finish this sentence, please, Your Honor. I will be a successful Chief Justice in 1 to 2 years if...
If, gosh.
Your goals.
I am. There's no if. I am going to be a successful Chief Justice during my 2-year term because I'm going to work very hard at it. I'm going to give it my all. I'm going to enlist the help of the 6 very, very bright justices with whom I work. And I think together we will make really quite a difference for the Supreme Court.
Chief Justice Pat Rogenczak, thanks so much for talking to Wisconsin.
You're very, very welcome.
Thank you.